Welcome everyone for joining us today, and a special welcome to our newest board members, Carla Chambers, Ben Dumling, and Shonda Ferrari. I am so pleased that you're all three here in person as well. This is my first meeting as chair, and please be patient with me as I find my way here. I will review a few items before we begin today's information sessions. Our morning will include an orientation set with a series of facilitated items for our board to engage with each other and with staff. Our afternoon will be geared to participating in a virtual tour about non-regulatory forest management actions, including shared stewardship. I would like to thank everyone for coming together and working collaboratively to make these unique events happen today. We will be streaming this public event on YouTube, so to ensure our viewers online can follow along with today's events, remember to identify yourself for the record and as we move through the agenda items. Everyone participating or presenting, please silence cell phones and limit background noises. Remember to use the mute feature when you are not speaking. If your video is enabled, feel free to disable it if you need to step away, and you can use the chat function on Zoom to connect with our ODF support team in Salem during the meeting. Breaks can be taken intermittently throughout the day, and I will work with the Salem support team on communicating these to the board members and to guest presenters. With today's event being informal, I encourage board members to speak up and engage with one another and staff. During the orientation, our facilitator will moderate, field questions, and generally keep us on track. For the tour, if board members have any clarifying questions to ask, I recommend using the raise hand function. This way, our tour guide can track and appropriately respond to our questions. For each part of the day, we are scheduled to have some time to discuss among each other, ask questions, and share any final thoughts as we close out each session. Additionally, members of the public, we understand your interest with the board's activities. Therefore, we open today's information sessions to be viewed online, and general comment can be provided to the board as you can see fit, but no testimony will be available for today's event. With that, any questions? If none, I will move on to the roll call. For our new board members, it is customary to perform a roll call before we begin with proceeding with board items. This ensures a quorum is present. So with that, make sure you are unmuted as I go down our list. Carla Chambers?
Here.
Ben Dumling?
Here.
Shonda Ferrari?
Here.
Joe Justice?
Here.
Brenda McComb?
Here.
And myself, Jim Kelly, here. Okay, let us proceed with agenda item one. Peter, can you introduce our facilitator and start us off on item one?
Thanks, Jim. Welcome to the April Board of Forestry meeting. This meeting is designed to introduce and orient new board members with one another, returning board members, and agency executives. I'm pleased with the opportunity to work with a new board chair to ensure a high-functioning board. I'm especially excited to revise the board's vision of sustainable forestry in Oregon in the context of the greatest threat our forests have ever faced, climate change. It is fitting that this meeting is occurring in April, recently proclaimed by Governor Brown as the first ever Oregon Arbor Month. Quote, because trees are vital to our individual and communal well-being and future prosperity, and because all Oregonians have a stake in the future health and replenishment of our urban and rural forest, there should be more than a single day or a week to participate in these activities, unquote. In past years, when activities took place during Oregon Arbor Week, the first week in April, the wide variations in climate across a big state like Oregon meant that many places were having to schedule their spring plantings and celebrations after it had ended. So with the full month, all activities can take place under the umbrellas, and all communities have the flexibility to schedule activities when they make the most sense locally. So this morning's session will end with an overview of the forestry program for Oregon, followed by an afternoon virtual tour, which will provide real context, landowner perspective, and examples of how the department works to implement the board's strategic goals. The tour will share some of the realities, benefits, and challenges to forest management decisions relative to non-regulatory, voluntary, and incentivized approaches. We hope this three-stop virtual tour, the board and individuals viewing online will consider the importance of building external partnerships to promote stewardship agreements and advance the board's goals. How state funding to provide incentive assistance to family forest landowners is minimal, and collaboration through the planning process is not only a value, but required to make these agreements successful. Gaining an understanding of how complex these plans are and how these agreements are developed for site-specific landscapes in which they will be implemented. This tour will provide a glimpse of how the department's coordination and technical expertise are essential to helping make these opportunities available to family forest landowners. Additionally, hopefully you'll recognize how shared stewardship approach leverages available funding source and requires the expertise to engage a broader spectrum of constituents when prioritizing finite resources across a landscape to achieve forest management goals across all lands. So after lunch, Private Forest Division Chief Kyle Abraham will set the stage for the collaborative efforts at Port Blakely, Bauman Tree Farm, and the department staff who helped develop this first virtual tour. So I will now introduce our facilitator, Robin Harkless, who is Senior Project Manager with the National Policy Consensus Center in Oregon's Public Policy Alternative Dispute Resolution Program, Oregon Consensus, housed at Portland State University in the School of Government. In her current and previous professional roles, Robin has provided collaborative governance consultation and facilitation services to state agencies and boards and their publics in natural resources, health and recreation, as well as federal land managers and regulatory agencies, Pacific Northwest tribal governments, and various community groups. Robin previously served on a statewide citizen initiative review commission, which sat within the Secretary of State. She has also worked previously with this board at the retreat in 2019, and currently consults with the department on strategies for the forestry program for Oregon revision, process planning for our climate change and carbon plan, strategic visioning with the state forest divisions, recreation, education, and interpretation program, and now she will work with the 2021 transitioning board. Robin?
Hi, Peter. Thanks for the introduction, and hello to the board members. I wish I could be with you in person. And I wish I could see you a little more clearly. They're pretty small icons here on my computer screen. I see some waves. Hi, Ben. this today has been set up really to invite some just kind of it's a bit of a meet and greet for the board and also an opportunity for your public to hear at least kind of a quick introduction of each of you to each other and to your public. So we don't have a lot of time. I wish we had more time. And of course, in a more ideal world, we would all be together. But we'll do our best and just really invite you to kind of sit back and also lean in with each other and maybe try to get to know each other a little bit as you're launching as your new board is now established. So with that, I would like to just invite the board to share with each other just some insights about you and sort of what brings you to this work. So I think how we'll do it, and actually one thing I checked on is use of the chat function. We prefer that we not use the chat function to do any sort of like dialogue with each other today, but really just to speak with each other so that we can both capture it for the public and also for you to have a chance to hear each other's voices. But the first question I have for you is, you know, just a little bit of background about yourself, potentially relevance to your work here with the board, and sort of what brought you, what brought you to want to serve on the Board of Forestry. So Jim, you'll kick this off, and then you can just pass it to someone else on the board, and we'll go from there.
Okay, well, I think at first glance, my background probably does not make one immediately think that this man is qualified for the Board of Forestry. But I grew up in Portland. Grew up in a family with a family business, a contracting business that was in the basement of our home. A big Irish Catholic family, of which I was the baby of eight. And I have twin brothers that are 2 years older than me. And as I've told, and people think this is a joke, that one would hold me while the other would beat me. And my wife describes, if you really want to understand Jim's personality, focus on that. I grew up, as I said, in Portland and parochial schools and the whole big Irish Catholic family background. After college, I dropped out and came back to Portland and actually worked in the family business for a while, learned how to become and became a carpenter. But I started at, I think, age 23 or 24, what was then, this was in the 70s, a junk store. But the idea was to salvage architectural items from houses and buildings being torn down and to be able to resell those to people who were restoring homes. And it was a very, very small operation to begin with, and then slowly grew through the years to the point that we started manufacturing lighting and hardware for historic buildings and homes, and not knowing better, trying to sell those throughout the country through catalog and eventually through the internet, as well as a store in Portland, and opened a couple more stores, and then almost went under with the recession, but at that point, I had been running the company for 35 years and sold it to Williams-Sonoma. So it is now one of their brands. And so they have stores throughout the country. Overlap with that, at one point, I was better at starting a business than really running it, and had others that as the company grew larger under my ownership, that really ran things. And so my wife and I purchased a ranch, in a very rundown ranch in Eastern Oregon, back in 1999. So we went from knowing absolutely, having no business and knowing nothing about ranching and raising cattle, and now have done that for 22 years and increased the size of the ranch. And really, we're not talking, we've been very hands-on. We have one employee, our lead cowboy, but other than that, pretty much do things ourselves. And so that's been our life. And I think, you know, that what is my unique experience is this having experience of both that pretty deep experience at this point of rural life, as well as my background in the city. And I've always been, you know, really curious and wanting to understand the cultural and all the other ways that we have been divided between urban and rural. And And so it's been a tremendous experience to be able to see the good in people in these different walks of life, and to understand where people are coming from. It's frustrating, very frustrating to watch, and to see the challenges that rural people face, and that's, you know, that's why this is part of why our work is so difficult, because here we are trying to deal with things like climate change, and at the same time try to keep these industries vibrant and these communities whole, it's really tough work, but I'm glad to be here doing it.
Thanks, Jim. You can just pass it on to whoever, next board member.
Okay, well, it's a pleasure to join this board, and thank you for the warm welcome. Jim, growing up in Eastern Oregon in a now fifth generation family cattle ranch and wheat ranch, it'll take you 50 years before the neighbors over there are going to really think you'll make it. So you have a ways to go. Yeah.
Oh, and I understand it. Yeah.
So I grew up in Sherman County, and one of six kids. We milked cows and had all kinds of chores, and made my way to Oregon State. It was assumed that my brothers would take over the ranch and that I would go to college and that I would pay for it. And fortunately was able to do that, where I met my husband. And at 24 and 25, we founded a farming and food processing company, Stallbush Island Farms. And I studied agricultural economics and finance, and have spent the last 36 years, building a private business, working in the international markets, working in the food markets, and also serving on, some boards, and spent almost 20 years working with the Federal Reserve boards and councils, and 16 years on the Ford Family Foundation board, and was on the Board of Agriculture, and serve on, a couple on the Hampton Affiliates board. But it's really a pleasure to serve on the Board of Forestry, because I think it, unlike any time in the history, whether it's the weather, or just all the challenges, facing this industry, how we manage our natural resources today is a real challenge. And we see that in farming. There's just so many things that we do differently today than we did even 4 and 5 years ago. And I think with all of these fires and all the financial pressures on this department, there's just more unprecedented needs and challenges. And I'm really looking forward to serving with these new board members. And I think one of our goals is to help change the conversation and the tone, and how can we really make a difference in, helping this agency and the state of Oregon. So it's a pleasure to be here.
It's looking like we're going to be going alphabetically, and the new board members are lined right up. So go for it.
Thank you, Jim. I spent the morning this morning. I was up at 5:30 coordinating loggers and log trucks on our forest. We're in the midst of a logging project right now. And so I wear a couple different hats. I'm a fifth generation Oregonian, and I'm raising the sixth generation in our little forest, the Xena Forest, just west of Salem here. And my great-great-grandfather started the sawmill in downtown Portland, at first in Mill Street in the 1860s, I think. So there was a long history of timber in my family. There was a 3 or 4 generation gap, and my parents came back into the timber industry. And the theme for me of working in the forest and working with trees is it's home. I've lived in the forest all my life. That's just in a very personal and meaningful way, the forests are where I feel at home. And I am very excited about this opportunity to be on this board. I've sort of looked up to this board for many years as something that I thought, wouldn't that be nice if I could be here someday? And careful what you wish for, here I am. Along with managing our family forest, we also run a sawmill and millwork operation. I've, for many years, tried to figure out how do we make the most of this little patch of forest that we have. How do I make a living, raise a family, support a number of other employees on a small parcel of forest? And so to that end, I've worked for many years to come up with new wood products that we can make and new things we can do with these more non-traditional species, our hardwoods that grow in Western Oregon. And we make a lot of hardwood flooring and lumber. And so I've seen the wood products industry, both from the silvicultural sides, as well as the manufacturing and wood products sides. And I'm fascinated by all elements of that. And I'm a geek and a wonk, and I like these policy issues that are in front of the board. I'm fascinated by them. And I am very much looking forward to working with all of you and the folks on the screen as well, to dig through these issues. And there are things I feel very strongly about, and I'm excited for this opportunity. Thank you.
Okay, Chandra, you're up.
Okay, excellent. Well, I just want to echo what my fellow new board members have said. I'm thrilled to be joining along with them, and it's been fascinating to hear a lot of their conversations and their hopes for this board, because I think we all mirror each other really well in what we're hoping to be able to produce on this board. And so for that, I'm really grateful, and grateful to join all the rest of you as well. And similar to Jim, you know, and I'm not sure my resume immediately is clear as to why I might be qualified to be sitting here either. My career has been spent working as an attorney and a policy advisor on complex natural resource issues. And I think that really is the tie-in here. And it's been trying to find, you know, durable solutions in that space that protect resources in a manner that is feasible for folks and based on the best available information. And as we know, that's a really challenging thing to do in really any natural resource space. And so I think that is my connection here. And my interest in natural resources, though, began a lot earlier than my career. I also grew up in Oregon in a small town, Harrisburg. It's an agricultural town. And, you know, I was able to tromp around through our forests and outdoor spaces and appreciated that. And I had a really immediate connection to fish and wildlife resources. And that was really what drove me. And at that point, all the environmental initiatives of the time were recycling. And, you know, I got really into that kind of stuff. And it moved me to think we need to really preserve our resources for the future. And, but I also had the benefit of working on a farm and living in an agricultural town. And my family had a small business down in Harrisburg as well during that period. And so, you know, you really got to see a lot of folks that, you know, the livelihoods and the communities depend on using natural resources. But at the same time, a lot of these folks, you know, they're avid hunters, anglers, they appreciate conservation. So there's, you know, dynamic, interplay and a recognition that there's a lot of complex individuals out there that want multiple things too, right? And have an interest in that. So you can't necessarily just pick a side, right? All these things are interrelated. So to that end, I decided that I was going to go to UC Davis for college because I wanted to further my animal science studies, which I did. I got an animal science and management degree. Thought I was headed on the path of being a veterinarian, but got sideways on that at some point. Didn't really fit exactly. And so ended up in law and recognizing that you can, you know, work to protect fish and wildlife and water quality and all those things through that space. And so out of school, I got a job at the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, working a lot in the regulatory space. So understanding Endangered Species Act, and again, how you implement a regulatory program in a way that is feasible and doesn't hopefully prompt people to come at you from all sides, although sometimes that, you know, that happens. So anyway, I guess long story short is I made my way back up to Oregon with my family. I currently have 4 kids at home schooling, and we do everything we can to get outdoors right now. And we're really struck by last summer when it was really difficult to do that because of the fire season. And, you know, again, just goes to show how important it is, how we're managing our forests. And so my interest in our forests is both personal and professional, and really is through the lens of wanting to ensure that, you know, we have the programs, policies, tools, funding that we need to sustainably manage our forests. And that hopefully we are really well equipped to tackle the long-term challenges that are already here, you know, like climate change. So anyway, I'm again really thrilled to be here and really look forward to working with all of you. Thank you.
Okay, Joe, you are up.
All right. Good morning from La Grande, Oregon. I'm a little bit jealous you all are there together. I've had a chance to talk with all of you on the phone. I appreciate you reaching out to me. And good to see you, Jim and Brenda. I grew up in St. Helens, Oregon, just north of Portland. And it's interesting, Ben saying, I am a fifth generation Oregonian also. Very proud of that. I was raised by teachers, and always thought that I would go into education as a profession. But then I went to work for an organization called the Oregon Department of Forestry in college, which basically turned me on to forestry. I actually met a stewardship forester and talked to him about it and got me kind of thinking about that. I ended up graduating from, Oregon State University in 1993 with a forest management degree, which was actually a terrible time to come out with a forest management degree. It was 1993. There wasn't much work. But that started me on a path of working primarily. I've worked in industry, worked for a variety of different, from integrated forest products companies. And currently now I work for Hancock Forest Management, which is a TIMO, a timber investment management organization in La Grande. I like to tell people, you know, I've been a dirt forester and now I'm a carpet forester. And if you're in my business, you would know what that means. I used to trudge up and down the Coast Range, following tree planters, putting in riparian area, you know, RMAs, doing broadcast burning, everything associated with being a dirt forester. In 2000, I got brought to Eastern Oregon. I've always had ties to Eastern Oregon, and especially Northeastern Oregon. I have family. This is where a lot of my family is from, John Day, and actually as far east as in a little place called Imnaha, Oregon, which they say it's not the end of the world, but you can see it from there. And I think you probably can. But if anybody have ever had the chance to go to Imnaha, you would understand that. So I guess I've just always had a connection to natural resources, working in the summers. I had the chance when I was growing up working on a cattle ranch, which I think really kind of got me inspired by just kind of natural resources and such. And then that kind of led me to my education in forestry. You know, I've really had the benefit of working a lot over the years with the Department of Forestry, with the Forest Practices Act, working with stewardship foresters. They used to be called forest practices foresters back in the day, but stewardship foresters over the years. So I've actually worked directly with the department, professionally served on associations with the department, fire associations, a variety of things over the years, which has now kind of led me to where I am today. My other real passion is not surprisingly education. That's something I tell people, my family, education, and forestry are kind of things that I'm very, very passionate about. Excuse me. I've served 11 years on the local school board in La Grande. I'm very proud of that work. If anybody's ever served on a local school board, that can be somewhat challenging, different, but challenging, a very diverse group of people. But I'm very proud of the work that I've been a part of. I've learned a lot about board work by serving on a La Grande school board, and very proud of that work. And I'm really optimistic about our future here with this board. And I'm really looking forward to the work that we're all going to do together for the people of Oregon. Thanks.
Thanks, Joe. Brenda, you are up.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. It's not often that M comes at the end of the alphabet here, so thanks for that. So a little background on me. I grew up on a small dairy farm in New England that went under after a few years. I remember watching the cows get loaded up into a truck and sold when the whole place went under. But our neighbors had a dairy farm that did hang on by a thread. And so I worked there for all through high school and realized by the end of high school that milking 60 to 70 cows twice a day was really not what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So I went to the University of Connecticut and earned a degree in natural resources conservation and then stayed on there for a master's in wildlife management. And that's when I got the research bug. I really enjoyed research. I also was a teaching assistant and I enjoyed teaching. So I moved to Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge and worked on a PhD down there, was able to succeed in that effort. Really from that point on became an academic. So I moved to the University of Kentucky, worked there in the Department of Forestry for 8 years. And then a position opened up at Oregon State University, and I was fortunate to get that. Moved out to Corvallis, worked at OSU for 10 years, loved it. It was a place I really felt like I was home, but it's not where the family was. The family was back east. So after 10 years at OSU, I moved back to the University of Massachusetts for 13 years as the department head and then as an associate dean. But my heart was still always in Oregon. A position opened up as department head at OSU in the Department of Forest Ecosystems and Society. I applied for that and was fortunate to get it. So I moved back to Corvallis and worked as department head for a few years, then as the dean of the graduate school for about 5 years, and then as vice provost for a year. While I was at OSU, I served on the very first OSU Board of Trustees, which was fascinating. It was my first experience on a large state board like that. Enjoyed it a lot. In 2015, after some 40 years in academia, I decided that retirement seemed like a pretty good gig. So I retired, but never completely left academia. I worked as an interim dean of students and associate vice provost at Stanford for a year after I retired from OSU. I still advise grad students. I still teach a few grad courses online. So I still keep my fingers in academia. But I also serve on the Board of Forestry, obviously, and I have enjoyed it. It's been great to work with colleagues like Jim and Joe, and I'm looking forward to working with the new board members as well. I also serve as the Board of Forestry's representative to the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, which has been fascinating. I've really enjoyed that serving on that board as well. So here we are with a new board and really looking forward to seeing what we can do together over the next few years.
Well, that's quite the collective portfolio. It's so fascinating to hear from each of you, just kind of where you come from and sort of what was the path to get you to this particular board. Some of you touched on some of your aspirations for working on and with the board. And I'd like to just invite you to share a little bit more, and we'll just do a go around again. Maybe we'll switch the order up a little bit. So Jim, if you're okay, I'll call on people this time around. But the question now is, you know, what are your aspirations for your time on the board? And with that, is there anything in particular that you feel you could best contribute or want to contribute to this work? And why don't we start with Chandra this time?
Oh, geez, thank you, Robin.
No pressure.
Yeah. Right. That's a meaty question. Okay. What would I like to accomplish? What do I want the board to accomplish? That's our question, right?
Yeah. Just kind of an aspirational goal that you have. And if you'd like to offer something that you personally would like to contribute to that.
Okay. Well, aspirationally, you know, and I think we're going to talk about this a little bit more. We've talked about being able to take a look at the forestry program for Oregon, right? We get this opportunity to chart the vision and how we'd like to see some of the forest practices play out over the next, currently 8 years, I believe it would be. And so I feel like that is a fantastic opportunity for us to consider, you know, whether or not we've got a framework in place that is best tailored to achieve the goals that we want, particularly considering, again, that we've got all of these large-scale challenges, including climate change. And I would really like to see a program that is really clear about what it's trying to accomplish, but also realistic about what it's trying to accomplish. And that I think we could enhance our transparency and accountability with the public by including metrics that we check in on. And that include some broader range goals that are a little bit more clear as it relates to how we're tackling some of the climate change related challenges. I think that is one key piece that I'm interested in and like to see further fleshed out over this next term. But you know, one of the things I had said earlier, and I think this is true, I want to take a broader look. I don't myself have 100% understanding of every program and policy and tool in the funding picture that we have right now. I know there are challenges with all of those different things. And so I think it is an opportunity for us to have a better understanding of what has been working well, what is the challenges that we've encountered with each of those things, and identifying some potential modifications to address those things. And so that is all very broad based, right? But I don't really want to get too far into the weeds. I think things that I'm particularly interested in, again, are some clear goals around climate change, just taking a look at the structure that we have that's guiding our decision-making on this board and whether or not that's the right structure. And then I'm really interested in seeing some of these broader range planning processes play out, including the habitat conservation plan, forest management plan. I think that is a fantastic opportunity to be looking more at an ecosystem level and seeing if we can get some durable protections in place over a long term. And I think that is a place that I can contribute. I do have a background in some of that Endangered Species Act work, but also on the water quality side of things. That's something that I've been really interested in as well, is how forest management contributes to, you know, riparian function and beneficial water quality.
Great. Sorry. Thank you. Joe. It's like a hot potato.
Sorry, but yeah, it's obvious. Here I go. Well, okay, Robin. Well, I guess, I mean, what I'm probably really interested in is, and I'll say this over and over again, is working towards solutions as a board and understanding these solutions that we reach are often not perfect, and we're trying to get, you know, towards better, right? One step closer to better. And not, you know, letting perfection getting in the way of that. I'm very interested, I guess, from just a philosophy of board work in that regard. I think also something that you always hear me, or something I'm very interested in, is how the decisions we are making are affecting people of Oregon. You know, I live in a rural, poor area that's affected a great deal by natural resources, and the decisions we have or decisions we potentially make affect people. And so that's something I'm very interested in and will always be very sensitive. I live, work in a small community that's heavily impacted by natural resources and, you know, including forestry and the decisions that potentially this board makes. I think one of the things that how I can contribute is I've worked in forestry my entire career. I've worked with the Forest Practice Act. I've seen the act work. I've seen the effects of the act and what happens with the act. I'm really pleased that our tour today is talking about some voluntary actions that are taking place in the state of Oregon, because I don't think that we often talk a lot about that or understand a lot about that. I personally see that. I personally am part of projects that are voluntary projects, how we can really focus, you know, the rules that we create are general rules that we tend to try to adapt to, you know, large areas and so on. And there's times where voluntary measures can be really specific and really impactful and really powerful. And so I'm really happy to see that we're talking about that. I don't think we talk about that enough, but I think that's something that my experience just working both in Western Oregon and Eastern Oregon and seeing the act work and seeing the regulations and how they're employed on the landscape is a place that I think I can contribute because I've had that experience. So thanks.
Thank you, Joe. Carla.
Okay, thank you. My interest really developed as a result of serving on the governor's wildfire council. And numbers really speak to me. And I think an area that I can contribute is really in the financial big picture. Hopefully I will do my best to contribute in that arena. When I look at my husband and I, we're the first farm in the United States to be certified sustainable and through a third-party certification. And that sustainability model really looks at your entire operation and with a real goal of taking a long view over the next generation, over the next 45 years or under our watch with this natural resource, how are we really going to improve this? And you'd never say, wow, I hope I leave this operation to my children in worse condition, right? You would never do that as in a family business. You're always trying to improve the soil, improve the health, whether it's forest health or soil health. Your goal is to really improve that natural resource under your watch. When I look at the challenges that we face, you know, this department has spent $438 million in 5 years on fire cost. I worked with the Federal Reserve Board to the Minneapolis and St. Paul, or the Minneapolis and San Francisco economists. We put a 10 to 15x multiplier on that of what the real true cost of those fires are. It's not just the cost of firefighting, but you go to these seven rural communities that were so heavily impacted. And, you know, whether it's the 5,000 homes lost or the structures or the wheat crops or the fences or the outbuildings or the damage to just that total cost is somewhere in the 11 to 15x multiplier. You know, we've burned almost 10% of our forest acreage or over 3 million acres of our Oregon forests. And the first meeting, the U.S. Forest Service scientists told us to expect 3 to 4 times that over the next 30 to 40 years. Well, that's pretty alarming. And, you know, the trees burned, the wildlife lost, the rural economies really disproportionately impacted through these fires. The accounts receivable, I mean, the way it impacts this agency's budget, and then we try and collect from the federal agencies and how long that takes. And of course, we've got some internal work to do, but between lawsuits and fires, just the downdraft on this department's resources is very, very real. So my goal in serving is to help with the financial viability and to really take a look at that. How do we make improvements internally? But how are we really going to deal with this if these scientists are right and we've got 3 to 4x more of this coming our direction? I really want to help this board in changing the tone and the conversation. We do impact many people's lives, and I never want to lose sight of that. I want to help promote healthier forests, not on paper, but in real viable. We farm in the same weather that you are all applying forest practices. We, you know, and there's a lot of things that we do differently as a result of this. And how do we genuinely promote healthier forests in this environment? Thing I learned from the Wildfire Council is our burnable fuels load in Oregon is unprecedented. And listening to the firefighters and these forest fires burn so hot, it's, you know, putting their lives in danger. And you just look at the circle of sustainability around this whole picture. And I think we just really need to challenge where we're at. And, you know, how are we going to do better for the next 45 to 50 years? And how do we all need to change? Maybe get off the extreme shelves. How do we all need to change in this environment to improve our situation going forward? And in public policy, I think we often look at the first order consequence, but in economics, we were taught to learn at the second and third order consequence. And that's just a really important thought process, because what looks good on paper is, I think we have a hard time seeing that second and third impact. And certainly what has happened has had tremendous impact the last 40 years on these rural communities, rural counties, rural economies. And we need to think really hard about, you know, turning that around. Thank you for asking that question.
Thank you, Carla. Let's go to Brenda.
Thank you, Robin. I think maybe my personal philosophy on serving on a state board is probably important here. You know, whether I served on the Board of Trustees or the Board of Forestry or OWEB, my intent is to try to represent the views and values of all Oregonians, regardless of where they live, and over the full range of identities that are represented in Oregonians. So that means that there are folks who value forests in very different ways. And it's important to try, at least I try, to ensure that all of those different ways are considered in whatever policy decisions we make or whatever management decisions are made. So that's my philosophy of serving on the board. But then my interest really comes from having conducted forest ecology and management research for over 40 years. And my goal is to ensure that whatever policies that we develop or whatever management actions are proposed, that those are based upon the best available science. And by that, I mean the refereed literature. And that's always changing. That is not something that's static. It's something that changes year by year, day by day, even. And because I've been engaged in research for so long, I do try to stay up on the refereed literature as well as I can. And I want to be sure that whether we're talking about carbon sequestration and storage or climate adaptation or creating forests that are more resistant or resilient to fires that will occur in the future, or we're talking about water quality issues or an HCP and protecting endangered species, that we're coming back to the refereed literature as the basis for making those decisions. So that's my philosophy, and that's kind of my guiding view in terms of serving on the board.
Thanks, Brenda. Ben.
Thank you, Robin. So I guess I'll start this off by I'm learning fast about how state government works, and learning about the role that I have on this board, the role the board has in the department and in the state. And so I'm not new to trees and wood products and forests, but I'm not even new to policy issues, but I'm new to this state government and the workings here. So all of this is sort of tempered, all of my issues and ideas are sort of tempered by I'm still learning. But I see from my own personal experience with our forest, I see things through a climate change and carbon lens for the most part these days. And we've lost about 10% of our Douglas fir trees in our forest over the last decades due to drought and heat stress. And it's very real. I'm seeing very real changes. And on our forest have been innovating and trying to come up with new ways to grow a resilient forest for the future. And our forest is not a microcosm of the state's forest, but it's a lens through which I have been looking at trees and thinking about how do we ask those questions about what the forest looks like in 50 to 100 years. And when you're managing a forest in a static climate, that is a fairly easy answer to find. In a changing climate, that's a moving target that no one has the clear answer for that. But it's a question that I keep asking, and it's one I will be asking here on the board, is how do we grow trees into the future? How do we have resilient forests into the future? And I think there's a lot of innovation that we can bring to the table. And I'm interested in bringing my perspective with wood products and the role that growing trees has in the products we can make out of those trees and the larger sort of implications from a carbon perspective, from an economic perspective of how we can leverage this amazing resource that we as Oregonians have. I think I'll leave it at that for now. Thank you.
Thank you. And Jim.
I know we're going to run a little bit short on time, so the next question here was, you know, what commitments do I have? So I'll go right to there. I think, you know, the first commitment that I want to talk about is the commitment to have this a high functioning board. And it's easy to say that, but at this point, you know, I look at the relationship that I have with Brenda and Joe. We all like each other. We like working together. And I think we're all so excited to have the three of you, the different backgrounds and perspectives and all, just really, really, I'm speaking, I'm sure for the three of us, that we're, you know, it's been a long time since we've had a full board or something close to a full board. So we're very excited. You know, one of the things that Brenda and Joe and I complained about is that we had a less than dynamic onboarding process. We all came on at the same time. And I think we suffered some because of that. So we kind of got after the department, and I definitely want to congratulate the department. The department responded with what appears to me to be a very dynamic onboarding plan and process for you guys. And that's, I think, speaks to a commitment that I'll say that I have now, which is to focus a little bit more on the soft side so that we can develop the trust of, you know, and not just speak past each other as we get into all of these difficult issues. And that requires things like what we are doing right now as part of this onboarding process, taking the time, learning a little bit about each other, and the great work that staff has done, the executive team has done to do what we're doing today. I'm committed that we will, you know, we are constrained by law in certain areas of, in terms of our interactions for good reasons, but committed that we will continue to try to do everything we can to get to know each other and to build trust. You know, we've obviously been hugely constrained by COVID, but I want to push as hard as we can to move beyond those boundaries. and to return a place to where we have that public input that we used to have, and also to where we get out in the community and do the tours together and have meetings outside of Salem. It's really a lot of work to get that done. And we put a lot on staff and executive team and Hillary and all when we push for those things, but I will push for those. The other commitment I want to talk about, and we're going to talk about it more, and I'll preface this by saying that I've often been accused of and will admit to being pathologically optimistic. And I think we all are going to need to be pathologically optimistic going forward to do what we want. Because what I want is I want us to end up being the climate smart forestry leader in the United States and have Oregon be that. And at the same time, I want to retain a vibrant industry as well as a vibrant circumstance for smaller family operations, and that our rural communities not suffer. And that does take a pathological optimism, but that is my commitment.
Great. Thank you all. I have been informed we can go a little bit longer on this agenda item. So we'll take advantage of that since the conversation is just so rich and it seems really important for each of you and collectively to be able to have this discussion as you go into more of your business meetings and your work meetings, you might not have as much opportunity. And hopefully, as Jim said, there will be chance for this group in the coming year or a couple of years to be able to go do field tours and actually get together. But I want to just put a little bit of a frame around some of the things that you all were just talking about. I'm going to share my screen briefly and just food for thought. As you're embarking on this work together, and Jim, you kind of played into this really well in the comments that you just made. But in my discipline, which is mediation, negotiation, it also is widely used in organizational development, the field of organizational development. There is a frame around this idea of effective groups. And this is a very simple graphic. I adapted it from the kind of original, which was called A Triangle of Satisfaction in the Mediation Process by Christopher Moore. But it's a really simple graphic that shows kind of the three-legged stool of what makes for effective groups. In this context, when you're dealing with complex, contentious public policy decision-making, it can be helpful to orient to the three elements that make for effective groups, that the parties, in your case, the board members, and by extension, the public, need to have three areas tended to, and that there's a balance there. One, that there's clear, understood, and fair process and procedures for getting the work done. So part of, I think, where Jim was suggesting that, you know, this kind of helpful, thorough onboarding process in which board members come to understand the ways in which you conduct your business, how you make decisions, how items get added to agendas, all of the procedural things that allow you to do your work and make decisions, that's clear and fair and understood. The second is that there's some focus on relationship building and good working relationships, which leads to things like trust. And that's as important. You know, it's simple as offering 5 minutes on your agenda to check in with each other. It's as kind of extensive as going on field trips and making sure you're able to share meals together. There's a lot of different ways that this plays out, but that there's meaning and value to making sure that the sort of the emotional content of an individual in the group is taken care of.
And then thirdly, of course, is the substantive piece. So, you know, the information that you need that's relevant to a decision is there and available, and that you can, you know, that it leads to results. So what should be the most challenging for all of you, given the complex nature of your work, is the substantive. Very complex. As Brenda suggested, there's kind of new information coming in daily. And as some of you explored in your previous retreat back in 2019 around wicked problems, you know, your challenge is to make the leap from kind of having that information and developing that into a public policy decision. If the procedural and relational elements are healthy and clear, you're more likely to be effective at deliberating on substance and reaching good outcomes. So it's just food for thought. And as you consider this, you know, what are the ways that you know, as you're thinking about this coming into this work, and many of you have experience working on in other board spaces and other group, obviously, and many of you work in different group decision-making spaces. But what ideas do you have or what do you want to kind of queue up as important with each other about how the board can be effective in making sound substantive policy decisions, building good working relationships, or clarifying or improving processes? So we have a little bit of time just to maybe do one more go around to see, you know, what ideas or needs you might have at this juncture as you're kind of starting out. And I'll just start with Joe.
Okay. Okay. I was going to speak up there on things. Yeah. One thing in my experience working on a board that's really important, and I've said this before, is really no surprises. We should always be working towards no surprises, and I believe that, and because that's about trust, that's about respect. That's about, and so I think that's really important in our relationships, is that when we reach board meetings, we're not being surprised with things. We're not being, so that sounds simple, but it's also really important. The other thing I guess I would say, and this is something I work very hard on myself here of late, kind of while I've been on this board, quite frankly, is we all come into this work with our own bias, and bias is a natural thing, right? I mean, we all have our own life experiences and we talked about those life experiences, which has been great. And we have developed, you know, our own biases, and that's part of the human condition, right? I mean, we have our thoughts, but I think to grow, we have to often challenge those things. If we're willing to challenge some of those biases, I think that's also very important, because then you can be open and objective and begin to think maybe sometimes a little differently. I think that's very, very important. So that's what I'd offer.
Thank you. How about Brenda?
Yeah, I think, I think Joe hit on some key pieces. One is, well, in your three-legged stool, Robin, keeping up with the most current information is always a challenge. The processes, I think, are pretty well ingrained, but maybe there's some improvements that can be made there. I think the one piece that we really have to work on are the interpersonal relationships to build trust. And by that, I mean that we trust each other, even if we don't agree with each other, and we won't agree with each other. It comes to Joe's comment about bias. I think we need to work really hard to understand our own explicit and implicit biases, but we're all going to come to the table with some different ideas about what the best path forward is, and we need to do that in a respectful and trustful way. And if there are surprises along the way that kind of erode that trust, then the function of the board is really going to suffer. So we just need to keep that in mind.
Thank you. Jim?
Yeah, I would add to the no surprises. One of my rules is no surprises for staff either in a public meeting. I just out of respect to them. One thing, I take this work very seriously, and I think the value of the conversations that we can have one-on-one have been very valuable to me. Obviously, we cannot orchestrate where we make decisions outside of the public meetings, but I want to encourage all of you. I'm highly committed to this work. I personally am available, and don't mind taking calls from any of you to discuss anything most anytime, except our evenings are kind of sacrosanct. And I might not, after a glass of wine, I don't know how valuable my input would be at that point. But I'm otherwise an early morning person, and live in a place where it's okay that you expect the calls from your neighbors at 7 a.m. So I'll just lay that out there.
Thanks. Carla.
That's good. I told Jim the other day that 7 in the morning or 5:30 in the morning is a lot better for me than 8:30 at night. So I appreciate that. I think one thing we've often employed as a business practice is always going back to our mission, vision, and values. And this organization has a good mission, vision, and values. And the intellectual honesty to really challenge yourself and say, are these really words on a piece of paper, or are we really doing this? And I think that's a really healthy conversation for a board to keep. We talk about good science. We talk about economic and community sustainability right in our mission statement. It's a one sentence and it's good. And I think that's very healthy, the intellectual honesty to challenge ourselves. Are we really moving this forward? And I couldn't agree more on the interpersonal relationships and getting to know these fellow board members. And I really look forward to that.
Great. Ben.
First of all, I want to thank Joe, Brenda, and Jim for not only welcoming me, but your wise words of wisdom this morning. This is all, it's great. I think I'll echo some other comments about tours being very valuable. And that's where I learn best. That's where, especially with the work we are doing, we can read about forests in a study, in the newspaper, in the radio. We can hear about it from all different avenues. But without going out there and walking in the trees in the forest and talking to the people who have been there for decades, for a lifetime, for generations, and know those trees and know that place and the unique capacities and nuances of that little corner of this state, I think that's very valuable for us all to be out there and to really learn about these forests and the uniqueness of each little patch of trees. And I think that's very valuable for all of us as a board to immerse ourselves in. And I look forward to those opportunities.
Great. And Chandra.
I think we're off to a good start because I can say I agree with everybody here already on everything they've said. So I guess I'm pretty much just restating what you've already heard, maybe in a slightly different way. But, when I think about wanting to be an effective board, in the substantive side, I think, that we need to be really clear about what we're trying to accomplish, what our priorities are, our mission, our purpose. And I know that we'll have opportunities to do that, but, making sure that from the beginning, we're all on the same page about what we're trying to do. And then to Carla's point, I think, we want to be results oriented. At the end of the day, are we making progress? Are we effective at achieving those things and moving the ball forward or not? And if we're not, that we have the space to consider changes to strategy. And then on the process side of things, to Ben's point, I think, thinking about interesting ways to receive information, I think we need to have a commitment to drawing on multiple sources of information and hearing from different perspectives. you know, as a lot of folks have noted, there are a lot of folks that are interested in this forest and interested for different reasons in different ways. And there's a lot of different perspectives out there, and there's a lot of different places to get information. And I think we need to be proactive at getting that. And then on the relationship building, you know, everything I heard is fantastic. I think we really want to be building a culture where we're, you know, we have mutual respect, we have trust, and that we're promoting, I think I've heard the term and I like it, constructive debate, right? Like we can have differences, but it's moving us forward, and everyone appreciates where it's coming from, and we synthesize it. And I think that's a good way to proceed.
Excellent. Well, we do need to move on. I think you've got your executive team will be kind of providing some high level info on what work is in front of you. But I would just encourage you as you're moving forward in this work together that you kind of like do a pass back through those three elements and just check in and see, you know, are they all being tended to? Is there a balance there? And if something's off balance, then, you know, it might be a signal to the chair or to the rest of the board that, you know, you want to focus on one of those elements if it's not, you know, being tended to, and just see how that kind of creates, you know, effectiveness for your board. Just really excited to see where y'all go with all of this work. I'm very excited that you're all aboard. So thank you. And I think I'm turning it to Jim to turn it to others now.